Yeah, I wasn't sure whether or not she would show up as I spoke with her early on. And she didn't feel exactly totally in shape, so she wasn't sure. It's always emblematic of our practice to show up in front of the teacher or in front of people and just not knowing what is going to come out. And this is really our training. This is what we're trying to achieve. Always makes me think of that story that I like so much about Dogen Zenji coming back to Japan and after years of studying there and coming back from China and to Japan, going to Japan and being asked, "What did you come back? What did you bring back?" And he says, "I'm empty-handed." I've been reflecting on many topics recently. One that keeps coming back is the power of the legend of Shakyamuni leaving home. So the legend goes on, as you all know, it's like this prince and in his castle, so I mean, in his great palace, which probably was not a palace, and probably he was not a prince. But in any case, the legend goes that way, and he sees this sick people, this dying people, this corpse, and then the mendicant, and then he leaves. And I was reflecting on that. The meaning of that leaving home, on what does it mean that he lives in this palace, protected from all kinds of all kinds of realities, outside realities that he was trying to, that people were trying to protect him from, and then he sees that, and then he leaves his home. And what came very strongly for me is the I don't know, maybe I suddenly I started to see it from a different angle, but what inspired me is I realized, yes, there were experiences, not pleasant experiences, that he was confronted with. And nonetheless, he decides to face these realities. He chooses not to stay in this protected space where he was in. I was suddenly, I was, it came very strongly. I was linked with this, the first task that Stephen Batchelor talks about, embracing life in its totality, not just the pleasant aspect of life, but all the aspects of life, sickness, old age, death. He doesn't really know how to proceed. And so the mendicant offers that possibility that maybe there's a possibility to integrate all that, to live a life that includes, that embrace everything. And it's not obvious. That's also another stream of thought that I've been following. It is not obvious, because in many religion, in Christianity, in Judaism, and somehow also in Buddhism, in Orthodox Buddhism, it seems that, yeah, life is okay, but really what we're really looking forward to is really just trying to get rid of this really annoying life for the and gain the afterlife, gain the absolute nirvana, the thing where we're going to get rid of this really annoying part of existence that is really heavy, really unpleasant, and how can we get out of that? And there's an element in the text that we can find like that. However, my sense is that the path that is being offered also by Shakyamuni is also, instead of like this life right now, embracing the totality of it, even though there's some aspects that are unpleasant, and that implies anxiety, that implies a sense of unsatisfactoriness. There are arguments, contentions. How can we embrace all of it? And I think in a way, it feels like the starting point of certainly his path. So how do I do that? How do we do that? And I mean, a lot of you have heard me insisting on the intention of the practice of that we talked about on Saturday. It's like that intention of certainly probably his intention of, I want to embrace it all, not just the pleasant aspect, but all the other unpleasant aspect. And how do I do that? How do we do that? And maybe that links also to what Baba was mentioning earlier on. I don't think he excluded, and I don't think it's our path to exclude any of it, any of it, the experiences we are confronted with. The unpleasant, nor the pleasant one. The love and emotions and the question is more, how do we experience these emotions in such a way that it feels wholesome, that it feels complete, that it feels that it drives us towards freedom and towards liberation, and not the sense of incompleteness, unwholesomeness. And those are not absolute terms. I mean, those are not, this is not right or wrong. This is just, it's a very, I feel that our path is very much, it's a situational perspective, ethics, situational response. Our response depends on the situation. I listened to a podcast about Nietzsche the other day, and his call to say yes to life, to really say yes to all of it, really just totally reminded me of the meditation, the yes meditation that Roshi talked about sometimes, and that we practiced, and certainly, in a way, even if it's not expressed that way, this is what we do in meditation by welcoming whatever arises. Just saying yes to everything that is actually coming up. And that's like the first basic step that we do. Another stream of thought that I've been pondering about is that there's certainly a personal quest that he starts with. And I think we can all relate to that personal quest. How do we arrive at the practice? I mean, from a historical point of view, how do we get there? Where do we start from? With why do we start sitting in on our cushion? And I was reflecting on the fact that there was Shakyamuni has his big insight about the nature of reality, about how can we liberate ourselves? How can we live in a more spacious way, maybe that's a way to put it. And he has that as hesitation about how to share that. He just beginning, he's thinking, I mean, what the text says is he's kind of reluctant actually to share the practice, to share what he has discovered. And then when he starts to do that, he completely fails. His first encounter with the first people he sees after he's been convinced to actually share the practice. The first person he meets, it's total failure. The second people he meets, it's a little bit better, but it doesn't work. It's just, they don't ask any questions. It's just not happening. And so I was questioning the how does the other fit in the picture when we practice? When does it start? When do we start to feel the our interconnectedness, the desire to serve, the desire to help, the sense of compassion, Where does it start? How does it start? So I was wondering how, in my personal life, how that occurred for me. And again, I fell back on the Sangha. I realized how, for me, it was very personal. The practice was very personal for many years. And I realized that, I mean, it's like, I couldn't even pin down a moment, but I feel that when I look back, I can see that when on retreats, you're on your cushion, but then there's also all these other moments where you hold a position and you do things for others by holding a position. There's the kitchen where you actually serve people. You prepare food for others. And there's an expansion happening. And I feel for me, probably even without me really fully noticing it, by finding a place of stillness in ourselves, by stopping the continuous chatter in our minds, by witnessing the mechanic of our thought processes, something opens up. Or we could say, in our Zen jargon, the self drops. And because the self drops, something opens up. Or as the self drops. The world is suddenly one. And so the other is, we suddenly changes the relationship that we have with others. But it was, it's also a leverage point, I feel. Like I do miss a lot the physical retreats, our retreats that we hold, because we actually also see the functioning of that. It's much harder when we are in our rooms, and now we are in semi-lockdown again in France. It just reminds me how when we had the full lockdown, and I wasn't going out much, and then afterwards, as I went out, I started to be annoyed by everything. By every single interaction caused a lot of unpleasant feelings within me. And I'm really mesmerized as I keep reading and reading the sutras and the texts, how it's always about the how we do things, how do we experience reality. It's not that the question is not really about what is the nature of reality or what is the mind, or this is not the work we're doing, but it's more about how do I express my understanding? How can I still my mind? How can I not be caught in successions of thoughts and ideas and that leads me nowhere. How can I cultivate a sense of peacefulness and fluidity with others? And there's no single answer to that. I mean, no single answer in the sense of we can invent all kinds of practices to help us cultivate this. And I totally encourage you to invent your own practices based on what you're doing, what is your situation. Because our situations, all of us, are very different. And invent practices that help us to cultivate the qualities that we want to cultivate, the virtues that we want to cultivate. And that can change during the day also. If you have to take public transportation, well, Debbie is an expert on that. Tons of practices in there. If you have kids, tons of practices. If you're in a relationship, tons of practices. If you are sewing, tons of practices to do the tension. If you're sick, also, this is also so great teaching. If we need to take some decisions and we don't know what to do, how can we stay in a state of a knowing, just instead of rushing to take a decision? Can we just stay with that for a moment, stay with the uncertainty, stay with the fear, stay with the anguish, and really just really going back to that first task of embracing the totality of our experiences of existence, of the existence itself. I feel the Zen tradition is very lean. It really goes straight to the point. Sometimes it's worth unpacking a little bit what we're talking about because it's so lean. But because really it can be, we have all these koans that are really just extremely concentrated formulas to give us an idea of the direction of where we could go. Because this is it, it's very packed. Or just this, it's really, really packed as an expression of intention, of practice, of it's all true, of where to go and what we're achieving, but we can unpack that a little bit. But it's really that. It's just that. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. It's like that really first task of embracing reality as a whole. Reality or the Dhamma, all phenomena. That's extremely inspiring, I find. Another way to view that is really not no picking. There's a colon, I forgot what it was, but like no picking, no choosing. How can we not pick? Just by really welcoming whatever is presenting to us. Again, even the pieces of existential experiences that we dread facing. And this is where the joy comes in, I find. It's like, if we embrace all that, life becomes sweeter, nicer, wholesome, whole. Yeah. Yeah, it's really about this life. It's really no other life. And I'm stating that, I'm saying that, knowing that certainly it's, if we look at the history of religion and even like the part of Buddhism, it's not an obvious fact. Because like even that notion of bodhisattva, in our tradition, the bodhisattva is the one that basically stays to help everyone to reach enlightenment so that then everybody can move to the next step, which is really just getting out of that cycle of this unbearable cycle of rebirth and death and rebirth, you know, this unbearable cycle of samsara, this life. But no, just like the nirvana is actually happening every single time we actually drop body and mind. And it's not about escaping this life, is really about living this life fully. The four tasks, the translation of Stephen Batchelor of the Four Noble Truths, actualize the way. It's really just the way, and actualize the life that is totally full and embodied, and that we live at its fullest. And that includes love, that includes joy, that includes sadness, that includes death, old age, sickness. All our emotions, and there's really nothing wrong with that. Nothing, even nothing wrong with the self. I mean, it's like we have that idea that there's nothing wrong with the self. Nothing wrong with who we are, but then how with that do we live a wholesome life? Yeah, I think I want to, for the moment, stop talking, and we can exchange if that does that inspire you and make you think of something, I'll be happy to share. Let's share. Yeah, Anna. Oh, we can't hear you. You need to unmute. Right.
I just said hello, everybody. And then he said it's more about how than about what. And I feel that the how has to do with something like the right amount. For me, the how is, well, at this moment, I think that the how is something like the right amount. Because it's the right amount of everything for ourselves or for the others. I mean, for inside ourselves or for outside. I think it's always that, the right amount of everything that makes the things go ahead or not. Because we have to be there for what shows up. But how, I think that the how has to do with that. Because somehow we know some things, and we try to put those things in action. But in my experience, what brings me sometimes some difficulties is that thing about the right amount. That's all.
Thank you. Yeah, it's certainly part of, an essential part of the how. Yeah. I read this week in the Avatamsaka Sutra, which I talked about last week. This old text, one of the earliest texts of the Mahayana tradition, there is one chapter where they talk a lot about the how, and in every single little step of the, they basically you follow a person basically moving from his room to the Zendo, basically, and in each element there was also the element of the goodness, the for the other, the sense of opening up and how to bring you do that for the sake of others, you know, the first vow we recite, I vow to sentient beings and numberless, I vow to save them all, like in every little action. So there is a paragraph where it's something like basically where you put your boxer on, where you put your underwear, basically you do that with the goodness for everyone. I'm not sure what the exact expression was, but I have it behind me. It's really funny. When putting on lower garments, they should wish that all beings wear the foundations of goodness and have a sense of shame and unconscious. So when you put your underwear, you wear the foundations of goodness, which is, for those who have a rakusu, this is, I wear the Tathagata teaching. You wear it and you wear the Tathagata teaching. It's the same thing. And we do that for the sake of others, for the sake of being at the service of. Yeah, Barbara?
And how is a question of the mind or a question of the feel? How? For us and for the others. The how is a question of the mind or was a question of the feel?
Of the feeling?
The feel, the motion. Mind, yes, I know that opposite, it's not good, okay? Opposite is not good. Yes, I understand. Okay, but when you express the how of the practice, mm-hmm. it's a question of the mind, to us and the other, or a question of the feel. What is it? It's very important. Yes. Okay. Why we are here now in this 18 o'clock? It's a question of the mind or it's a question of the feel? Why? We are here. Yes, all of us here to press.
Yeah, I feel that if I understand you correctly, I mean, I think if the how becomes too intellectual, too processed, it becomes a what in a way.
The how? Yes. So, Anna, the how to mouth, the how. Understand the how to practice. I don't know. I'm a beginner, and what is very important? Amy, okay. I don't know what I can say. I'd love to sit, and I'm here. I'd love when she says that. I love. And finish when someone say you, I feel finish, no question, I feel, and the practice it's something that yes, I'm here, I'm not, I feel, yes, I feel that there is a smile, there is everything that Joa says, why we talk too much to suffering, and the happiness, the joy. Why, when your practice and my practice and all people talking about more suffering, we are prepared to suffering, to lead to suffering, but not lead to some kind of the joy or the happiness. And yes, and the practice, the how the practice, it's yes, it's to lead with happiness, I can't understand. I share it with us. My English, it's very poor. I think that last day of the practice, I think that I'm disappear because I can because I'm a beginner, and because I understand, and I try, and I am afraid with stay with you, with us, and I think that yes, because it's Joan and said run away of this situation, and some kind we think too much. Joa read a lot of books, a lot of books, right? And you are a lot of books, and I think, wow, and yes, it's the concept, or it's some kind that you can't understand, and only feel, I don't know, it's feel, it's the right word, but I don't know how to practice. It's a mind, it's the mind that define this practice, the mind, or the feel, the emotions, I don't know. Sorry to share. Sorry.
No, thank you.
I don't know. Yes.
Yeah, it's a lot of words to just drop all the words. It's a lot of books just to teach us to just be, and this is why I feel the Zen tradition has something very precious to offer. It's really condensed on very few words, because the bottom line is it is beyond words, but there are a lot of words, because when we start to unpack, and we make it very complicated, and we make very brainy, we make it very mental. But it sometimes it helps, sometimes it doesn't. It needs to be what we call a skillful mean, something, a skill, like a tool that is really just useful to get us to just that moment, just reality as a whole. And what you're saying about the, yes, I do feel that sometimes we talk too much about sadness and suffering and all that, and too little about joy. And at the same time, we shouldn't go all the other way around and just be being scared to tackle that or experience that. And just again, the bottom line is, how can we embrace the totality of it? And there is a lot of joy altogether in there. But sometimes, I mean, we've all experienced that in our sitting. Sometimes it's hard, and that's part of it. But there is a sweetness to it also, because we take it all. We take it all in. We witness, we bear witness, as Bernie Glassman said. We bear witness to the whole of life. I think also the all these books are also there because it all happened in various places, in various times, and we need to renew our language so that we don't get stuck. We don't get stuck in one notion. We don't get stuck in one formulation. I mean, we've experienced that when we recited the vows in various translations. I find that suddenly it's very, it becomes very alive, you know. Krisha is leaving us, or is she? Yeah, she just left. So she sent a message. Yeah, so we need to renew the language, but not get caught by the language, not being, how do we say in English? There's a spell that get lost in. So it needs to be a skillful mean. It needs to be something that enlives us, makes us alive, rather than makes us, you know, keep us in our mental, in a mental way of functioning. So in that case, that would go towards the feel that you actually mentioned, just like that, I feel. Any more comments, remarks, ideas? Yeah, Chuan?
Good evening, everyone. There's this word you used, and the word was on my mind. The word was actualization. And it's, I've been finding that it's a very helpful word. I like this word a lot because actualization, actualizing, the practice, as sometimes we hear or we read, it really brings us back to, it's about, doesn't bring us back, it's about coming back to whatever is this moment, as we say. And you were talking about how Dogen, after going to China, he goes back to Japan. I feel it's the same. It's about the same thing. That's why he went to look for. I don't know exactly what he went to look for in China. Answers, maybe, I don't know. I think it feels it's about the same thing. That's why we come here, let's say, every Thursday, or that's why we sit each morning. And you were talking also about putting on the underwear, like this foundation thing. And I was thinking, and also when you know, in the evening when I take off my clothes when I get undressed to go to bed, it's about the same. It's what's there to be done. That's appropriate, you know. At evening we go and we go and rest. We lie down to rest. Or at noon we prepare food, or I don't know, whatever. And actually, you were mentioning the what we say when we put on the rakusu. I wear the Tathagata's teaching. I always find it's not as whole as it is. I am the Tathagata's teaching. My words, my thoughts, my actions, my body. My work, food, eating, speaking right now. This is an actualization. It's now. It's right now. Thank you.
Yeah, and where else could it happen than now, actually? Also, another word also could be embodiment, you know, to embody the way, actualize the way, embody. So embody is also, yeah, you wear it with you. You are it. And yeah, in that sense, you are the Tathagata's teaching. Yeah. All right, I think we need to close. So we will thank you so much, everyone, for sharing, listening and sharing. And thank you. So we'll finish with the vows. Juan, you want to do the vow and the dedication? Thank you.
Yes.
Juan?
Yes.
Thank you very much for what you're doing. And can you pass on our best wishes to our teacher, please?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.